educated fleas. Do it, let's do it. Let's fall in love.
Whether it's falling in love or making love, you might say it takes a flea with some knowledge to engage in the complex process of mating. We'll probe the sex life of fleas, as well as the habits of two other summertime pests, ticks and chiggers, today on With Good Reason. I'm Sarah McConnell.
Sponges, they say, do it.
Spending time in the great outdoors may leave you with an itchy sense of wonder at the variety of insect life in Virginia. The bloodthirsty machinations of ticks, fleas, and chiggers can make for an uncomfortable summer. We'll talk in a moment about the tiny chigger. And John Blythe visits with a biologist who's collected two hitherto unknown types of flea. But first, the tick has been under scrutiny since the ancients remarked on its blood-sucking habits and harmful effects on humans and animals. Now, advances in gene mapping are opening exciting new research avenues for studying how the tick can give us dreaded illnesses such as Lyme disease and Rocky Mountain spotted fever, yet remain immune to those same diseases itself. Daniel Sonnenschein of Old Dominion University is working on, among other things, the development of a tick decoy to control ticks on livestock and wildlife.
If ticks can transmit disease, how come they don't get infected and killed by the very disease agents they themselves transmit? We're now looking at the basic question, do they have an immune system? And the answer is, yes, they do. And it's fairly potent. For example, if we deliberately infect ticks with a non-infectious, non-invasive, just common bacterium, they shrug them off, they destroy them. On the other hand, if we put a microbe, such as the one that causes Lyme disease, in the tick that transmits Lyme disease, they live. Why? How do they escape the tick's own immune system? Or do they? Those are the kinds of questions we're looking at now. Another area we're very excited about is the way in which ticks communicate with each other. Ticks, like many other animals, use chemical signals to signal to one another. Deer secrete secretions from the little glands in their feet, and that signals the male deer that the female is in heat. Ticks sometimes use those cues as evidence that there is a warm-blooded host around and will accumulate in those sites. And when the animal comes by, there they are, they're ready to attach. So we're looking into these very same kinds of chemical signals, and we found that ticks make their own. We call them pheromones. The sex pheromone will excite males, and they will come running over and try to mate with the pheromone-producing female. We're now looking into ways to exploit that for tick control.
In Zimbabwe, 1 million cattle died when tick control stopped during the 7-year war there. How had they controlled ticks prior to the war?
By dipping.
So ticks are really so bad in such circumstances that they endanger the life of the animal?
Oh, certainly. Not only because of the tremendous damage they do themselves, sucking blood, stressing the animal, damaging their hides, but also the disease agents that they transmit. In some areas, the disease agents are so deadly, they kill most of the herd.
Now, you and your colleagues came up with really an ingenious way to fight ticks on cattle in one African country. Tell me about how you did that and how that worked.
Ticks that are feeding on the animal attract others of their own kind from the vegetation to come and feed beside them, forming a cluster. We mimicked the same thing that the male ticks were able to do.
Did you have ticks coming far and wee?
Yes, from from many, many feet further away. I mean, they 10 or 15 feet distant, they would come running up to those either tick-infested animals or pheromone-impregnated animals. So we got the idea of impregnating it into common plastic. And this was permanently affixed to the tail of the animal.
Why the tail and not the neck, let's say?
Well, the tail is frequently tucked underneath the body when the animal lies down to rest. And therefore, it applies this thing right close to the udder. In the case of the females, those udders are very large and frequently covered with ticks. And the ticks themselves are coming out of the ground and climbing up in the animal, attracted by these pheromones and attaching all around this device. And those that do so are then getting killed within hours or a day or so after they attach.
Is there a current area of the world or a specific problem that scientists are now talking among themselves about and looking into?
Well, one of the great mysteries is where these diseases have come from that we hadn't seen before. For example, Lyme disease burst on the scene in the 70s. Deer ticks were starting to increase in range and abundance as deer populations began to spread. I'll remind you that by the early 1900s, right around the turn of the century, the white-tailed deer had been virtually eradicated from the eastern United States by hunting. But these deer then were reintroduced from some other relic populations in the Midwest, like up in Wisconsin. And as that happened, these relic populations began to spread, and with them, the tick that transmits Lyme disease. That had also persisted. We know Lyme disease was present long before that. In fact, scientists have discovered evidence of the Lyme disease bacterium in museum specimens going back to the 1800s.
Well, we have deer in Virginia and have had for some time. Why Lyme disease in Connecticut initially and not here?
You know, it's possible that it was here also when we simply didn't recognize the disease as an entity. We're now seeing essentially an epidemic situation with Lyme disease. Another disease that has emerged in recent years is a disease caused by a rickettsia, and they're also tick-borne. We have no idea where they came from or why they weren't recognized decades ago.
As a tick expert, what precautions do you know to take that we who are perhaps in blissful ignorance may not know about?
Well, obviously, you're at greatest risk when you go into a tick-infested area where the diseases I've just described are endemic.
So do you stay away from camping trips, for instance?
Oh, no, but I take proper precautions. You just simply spray yourself with common repellents. Those repellents that contain DEET, we call it DEET for short, are very effective. It should last for a good hour or two. You may have to reapply it periodically. Other precautions are to tape your boots and socks so that ticks cannot gain entry to your clothing and crawl underneath the clothing to the upper parts of your body. Now, the people who go into wooded areas for camping or hiking in sandals, bare feet, with shorts, so they have a lot of bare leg exposed, short sleeves, are just exposing a tremendous amount of body areas for ticks to attach to, and they don't bite like a mosquito or a deer fly or one of those other vicious biters. Rather, they very, very delicately cut through the skin's upper layers with their delicate mouth parts, and they secrete cement. And they bind themselves to the skin and dig in deeper very, very carefully, very slowly, and they create a feeding pool underneath their mouth parts. And within a day or so, they're cemented in place, and that's when they're hardest to pull off.
We initially were told to pull them off. Later, the advice was, don't leave the head in the wound. Are these myths?
No, that's quite realistic. You don't want to yank the tick out with a harsh, very rapid pull, because that is liable to break the mouth parts off. But rather, you have to use a gentle and rather continuous pulling action. And it's best to do this with tweezers.
What about rubbing alcohol put over the tick to make it back away and suffocate?
That won't be effective.
Okay.
The tick will die in place, still attached, because it's cemented. That doesn't break the cement.
Now, it can eventually break its own cement and fall off.
Oh, it does, yes.
Right.
Now, we wish we knew the name or the identity of the cement and the ways in which they release themselves.
I think it's super glue. I was on Hog Island, a mostly deserted barrier island off Virginia in late spring, and there seemed to be an exploding tick population then. How soon do they die if they don't get a meal?
Most of them will survive for up to several months, but eventually, if they don't find a host, yes, they will die. I visited Paramore Island a number of times. That's just, I think, one island further up. In one day, we collected almost 1,800 ticks.
What can you tell me about how ticks know that we're there?
Well, there are several ways. One is they use volatile chemicals like carbon dioxide and ammonia. These are chemicals that are obviously produced in our breathing or emerge from our skin, our waste products. The tick is attracted to that.
How are they able to latch onto us so well with a quick brush?
We call this the ambush technique. They climb up on blades of grass, weedy stems, especially along animal trails like a deer path. And they wait there. And if no animal passes and they get stressed by too much water loss, they simply crawl back down and restore themselves. And then they climb back up again. And they wait. If nothing happens, they continue waiting. Eventually, if nothing passes by, they'll starve to death.
What are the biggest ticks, and what's the largest engorged tick ever recorded?
Ooh, well, there are some huge African ticks. I think it's the rhinoceros tick is the largest one I've ever seen. And it goes up to about 2 to 2.5 centimeters long, about an inch long.
How much blood can a tick consume?
Well, the tick can consume large quantities of blood. The ticks that we work with here in my laboratory are the American dog ticks, mostly. Each one, a fully fed female, will consume an average of about 0.5 grams of blood that it will actually weigh, but it will process more than that. The amount of blood in its body when it's finally finished is about 0.5 gram, but it has used about 3 times that amount, because what it does is it consolidates that blood, getting rid of the excess water. It secretes that water back into the skin of the animal body. Some of it is lost through evaporation from its own skin. And it continues sucking and concentrating that blood meal and sucking some more. That's the way they can get more protein, because blood is watery, and it's actually more dilute than their own internal body tissues.
Are there any animals that have good tick defense mechanisms?
Oh, yeah. Well, the most obvious one is grooming. Animals are aware of these ticks, and they groom themselves. A heavily tick-infested animal is often a sickly one.
Are you more repulsed by ticks, having spent so much time in close proximity, or are you somehow strangely attached to them?
And no, I don't love them. You know, you reach a point where you're no longer horrified or repulsed by the things that you're familiar with.
Wait, are you not horrified and repulsed?
No, but I don't love them either. But I can pick up a tick. It's not going to infect you with any disease agent unless you deliberately crush it and rub it into a wound that you have.
Should people wash their hands after removing dog ticks?
Yes, certainly. There's always a chance that you would have little cuts and abrasions. We believe that people such as hunters who are dressing a tick-infested animal like a rabbit that had this disease have frequently been reported to have infected themselves just by handling the ticks and not washing. So yes, it's a good idea to wash after handling them. I would certainly recommend it.
Dan Sonnenschein is a professor of biological sciences at Old Dominion University.